Can you tell us a little bit more about the concepts and ideas behind this release?
Automata was our second record. We self-released the first one. It was called Captains of Industry, and we released it through my label, Ball Freak Music, which is basically a label I started in 2005 with my buddy Bumblefoot, who you may or may not know is one of the guitarists in Guns N' Roses right now. He and I have been playing together in bands and working on stuff together for a long time. And after we started demoing the second record, we kind of felt that it was definitely denser and heavier than the first one, and we were, as much as we wanted to kind of do it ourselves again because of the state of the industry and because we've all experienced horror stories with labels, you know, Chris and Dillinger and myself and my electronic project, and Brett and I were in a band together that kind of experienced some growing pains with major labels and stuff like that. We kind of felt like if we brought the record to somebody who, you know, who we trusted and who we kind of respected, then we might, it might serve, you know, the album better promotionally. The album's kind of a loose concept record. The concept of Automata was kind of Brett and Chris's idea, was kind of the struggle between man and machine, and how machines in general kind of taking over for mankind and doing the jobs of mankind, which is kind of what we're experiencing in the 21st century now anyway, with computers and all that shit. And we demoed the record, and we thought we had something better than the first record, something heavier and something denser, and we had a very short list of people we wanted to send it to for the possibility of you know, distributing it, and Metal Blade was really high on that list, and Chris sent the tracks over to Brian Slagle, and we were pleasantly surprised with the fact that we didn't have to kind of go through the whole auditioning process. Brian's always been a big fan of Chris's music and Dillinger, and he's a big Coheed fan, so, and he loved the record, and that was all there was to it. So, I mean, it was just a no-brainer. We said, you know, if he's as interested as he is without it really knowing more about the band, and knowing that Chris is going to be on tour for fucking 8 months out of the year, and he wants to release it, then let's just do it. So that's kind of how it came about, and it basically took about, I don't know, maybe like a year and a half to put the record out, and I'd like to finish everything. We gave them a finished product, which they were obviously pretty thrilled about. They didn't have to shell out a ton of money for recording. You know, I think we put the record in good hands. I mean, it's been a new experience for us to work with a metal label and not kind of do everything on our own, but it's certainly refreshing to know that there's people out there who give a shit about your music as much as you do.
And what, I mean, since the band kind of has a really unique, really elaborate sound, what can you say is your, like, target audience for this type of music?
Target audience? Intelligent nerds who like crazy math rock drumming, and we've gotten good feedback and really good press from the record so far, and that's that's the best compliment we've gotten in general. The overall theme of the record is that it can't really be pigeonholed into one particular sound. It's not like one particular genre of music, and I think it speaks volumes about the three different guys in the band and what they all bring to the table. We all have, we have some similar influences that are pretty obvious when you hear the record, bands like Nine Inch Nails and Tool. But at the same time, Brett and Chris in particular, they've been listening to like a lot of Peter Gabriel lately, and Jonesy, the lead singer of Sigur Rós, and I'm a big Faith No More fan. I'm a big Mike Patton. I wave the Mike Patton flag really high. He's been like a big influence of mine for a long time. A lot of people, say that my vocal style kind of sounds like him in a lot of ways. But and again, I take that as a huge compliment. But I think our target audience, honestly, was us. I mean, it's not meant to sound snobbish or anything, but we kind of felt like we had to impress ourselves before we decided that it was going to impress or maybe not impress other people. We didn't really go into it thinking that that we were kind of targeting any particular audience. We had our own feelings about how a a record should be made and how a record should sound. And as long as we were cool with how it sounded and there was somebody else out there who was willing to distribute it, we just wanted to get it out there and kind of see what the rest of the world thought about it. And, you know, so far so good. The reaction to the record has been, you know, overwhelmingly positive. There's always going to be a troll or two out there who shits all over because it doesn't sound like Dillinger or, you know, what's Chris Penny doing and, you know, doing with these other two clowns or, you know, or some people who just shit on Chris just for the hell of it, for whatever reason. But generally speaking, we've been real happy with the press that we've been getting, and we want to kind of turn that into something even more positive, whether it's through another record or through touring or whatever else. But it's hard to nail down one particular sort of fan, because it's not your traditional sort of metal album, and from what I've heard of the other bands on Metal Blade, we're really not your traditional Metal Blade sort of act. So, but we like that. We don't want to be known as the band that sounds like everybody else.
And I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, Chris has like really complicated touring schedules and stuff. So, are you guys afraid that this might, you know, kind of like slow down the momentum that the band is bringing since releasing the album in August, and then you won't be able to tour for a while?
Well, it's funny. I had I went out to L.A. A couple months ago. Brian Slagle invited like a bunch of industry peeps out, which he does like twice a year, which I think is really cool, just to kind of have like a state of the industry sort of conference where he kind of picks everybody's brain and about like how things can be promoted better and how to promote the bands properly in today's day and age where the internet has kind of taken over the way music is promoted and the way music is sold to the masses. And I had a conversation with Mike Fahley, who does, who basically sets up tours and stuff, and I asked him straight up. I had a little time with him alone, and I said, do you think a band on your label can put out a record without the benefit of playing shows and succeed? You know, and I got an honest, I was really pushing for an honest answer from him, because that could potentially be us. And he said no, I said, then we should talk, because I don't want to release a record on your label and then find out that 25 people bought it because we don't have any tour support, and Metal Blade isn't exactly the sort of label that screams radio play, based
on. Yeah.
So there were certainly some concerns up front, but like I told you earlier, the thing that really I thought was cool was that they still wanted to sign us in spite of the fact that they knew Chris was going to be in Coheed and that was going to be his top priority, and that Coheed is the Dave Matthews Band of the metal industry. They're just, they're on the road constantly. And they still wanted to do it anyway, knowing that we kind of had that albatross around our neck. So I think it spoke volumes about how much they loved the record. So I kind of took something positive in me kind of saying me in the terms of, Chris is on the road and I'm really the guy who's on the front handling like the business end of things for the band most of the time. That said, I also knew that I wanted to get back on a stage and see if we could, pull this off live. And I knew that I wanted to, I knew that it was kind of crucial to do that for the sake of the band having that that shelf life, and for the album having the shelf life. And as it turns out, we've just got a bass player. We've been rehearsing, during Chris's downtime from the last tour. Now he's back on tour with the Deftones, and he'll be back middle of December, and we're going to get back in the studio and rehearse some more. We're going to start working on a new record, and then I think he's going to have some free time from, hopefully, knock wood as I'm telling you this, for the whole, maybe the first 3 to 4 months in 2011. And as far as I'm concerned, the timing isn't perfect, but, it is what it is. You take what you can get, and even though the record will be 4 or 5 months old at that point, it's still something that's worth promoting, and we'll probably get out on the road and do some short tours in January and February 2011. So better late than never, as they say.
And, musically, like you said, yeah, did you guys ever thought that you were going to play the songs live, since it has so many elements that, they might have to be sampled or they might not make the cut when you guys are actually rehearsing them for a live setting?
Well, we're all pretty technically adept, and, going back to your last question, too, there's no, it's not like I'm sitting around waiting to go on tour. I mean, I run a label, I have another band. Chris is obviously doing his thing with Coheed. You know, Brett and Chris are working on an electronic project called, like, a soundtracky sort of thing called Fight Mannequins, which is a bunch of, like, soundtracky sort of orchestral pieces that they've been doing for a long time. And it's not like, you know, it's not like when we go as Return to Earth goes. Return to Earth is something we're all really passionate about, and it's something we want to, you know, we want to continue to do together because we kind of jones off playing together as a band. And, you know, the bigger concern to me was, you know, based on the question that you just asked, is what are we going to be able to pull these songs off live? Because the production is very dense, as you know. There's a lot of ethereal keyboard sounds and piano stuff. I'm the only guy in the band who can carry a tune, so there's 2, 3, 4, 5 part harmonies here and there, and, you know, I wanted to do it right. I didn't care at the time that, oh, how am I going to sing this live, you know. That said, we've gone into the studio, and we've actually, like for the first time since we made the record, we're all sitting there in the studio trying to figure out how we're going to play the songs live, and we took maybe, you know, there's 12 full-length songs on the record, and we kind of thought about it in our heads. We didn't want to go up there and Milli Vanilli it and just play to a track or to an iPod or a laptop. I mean, listen, and the bands do it. You know, bands do it, and bands will continue to do it, and more power to them. But I think, you know, we wanted to capture, without losing too much of the essence of the songs, we want to capture the spirit of, like, being live. And, you know, there might be a song like Back of My Hand where there's that crazy sort of ethereal piano, like, crazy line that Chris came up with at the beginning, like, that we might trigger a sample for and use a MIDI controller. I might use, like, a, you know, we're going to try to use equipment that will help aid us without faking it, you know, in the sense that I can go up there and maybe use, like, a TC Helicon and, you know, come up with, like, 3-part harmonies just by singing into separate mics, going back to Mike Patton again, if you've ever seen Phantom Is or Bungle Play or anything like that. He's up there with, you know, 700 different microphones, which are attached to a whole different bunch of processors, and that's just like a kid, like, opening up a bunch of shit on Christmas morning. Like, I'm excited about, like, playing. We're excited about playing with the toys that kind of will allow us to make things sound good. And then you talk about the band organically when we get on a stage. I mean, we've played You Will Be Replaced. We've played Edge of Forever. We've played Night of the Exploding Razors, and we just, you know, we played it without the benefit of any tracks or anything like that, and, I mean, it sounds pretty fucking good so far, and we've only really gotten started, so I'm pretty optimistic about how it's going to sound once we actually get on the stage together.
And, like you mentioned, I mean, the concept of the album is about technology and how it's replacing humans. Aren't you afraid that you're kind of doing the same thing with putting too much production and, you know, all these effects, all these processes into the music?
I don't know if we're afraid. I mean, I don't think you can go into writing a song, and if you hear bells or you hear like a string section or something like that, I don't think you should go into it thinking that, you know, oh, we're never going to be able to pull this off live, so we shouldn't put this on the track. You know, I mean, you hear a song in your head, and, you know, you're a mad scientist, and you feel like the song would benefit, you know, record-wise, you know, album-wise, it would benefit from having this particular orchestration on it or this amount of harmonies on it. I don't think you should hold back. I mean, you know, not to use this band as an example of who, you know, who we sound like, but take a band like the Beatles. I mean, go, like, listen to Magical Mystery Tour or Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band or even Abbey Road. I mean, there's so much shit going on. I mean, the producer of, you know, George Martin was the unofficial fifth member of that band, and there's no way they were ever going to pull it off live. I mean, there's no way you're going to, like, turn on A Day in the Life and hear that, like, orchestral crescendo now without having all those, like, that whole string section up on stage with the band. But I don't think we were worried about that, and I don't think we're worried about it now. I think that maybe a stripped-down version of Night of the Exploding Razors will even sound better than the version on the album, you know, and maybe it won't, and if it doesn't, we won't play it in the set. We'll just find, you know, we'll find the 6 to 8 strongest songs, and we'll make it work the best we can.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not comparing myself to the Beatles, by the way.
And what do you feel that now, I mean, since you've been in the industry so for so long, what do you feel that now it's key points that a band has to do right in order to get the right amount of exposure and, you know, get the fans, get the material to the fans?
You're asking what a band has to do right?
Oh, well, yeah, in your opinion, what do you think that over time has changed and now it's more clear that you have to do?
You know, it's, you know, our band is not a traditional one in the sense that we're a bunch of 25-year-old dudes who were willing to get on a bus and you know, or get in the van together and play, you know, play to 20 people in a podunk town on a Monday night and just, and then get on the bus and go to the van and go to the next one. And again, it's not meant to sound pompous, it's just the reality of the situation. We're all in our 30s, we've all, you know, obviously Chris has been there and done that with Dillinger, you know, 10 times over, you know, from playing the smallest, stinkiest places to now being in Coheed and playing at Wembley Stadium and Madison Square Garden and doing these huge things. And it really hasn't changed his expectations for, you know, for what he expects to happen, you know, with whatever band he's in. And, you know, I've never met a guy who's, you know, I thought I was the hardest working guy in show business until I met Chris Penny, and he's just, the guy doesn't sleep. I mean, he just, if he's not playing the drums or, you know, working on paradiddles or, you know, he's writing or working on 700 different projects. You know, as far as what to do right, for a band like us, I think it's just a matter of, you know, and it's kind of like the maxim that I use for all the bands on my label, you know, Ball Freak Music, is that, you know, songs are ammo. I mean, it's not the sense anymore where people can wait around 4 years for your next record to come out like it was, you know, when we were growing up and waiting for the next, you know, Faith No More album or Depeche Mode album or Def Leppard album or whatever it was. The attention span of the average music fan is so much different now than it was even like, I was going to say 10 years ago, but even like 3 to 4 years ago because of the internet. Because, you know, if not this, you know, you wanted to find out about your favorite bands, you would have to like send a self-addressed stamped envelope to their fan club, or, you know, you couldn't go on the net and get lyrics or get a free download or get merchandise the way that you can now. You would have to go to the concerts to get merchandise. You'd have to walk into a record store to buy an album, and now everything's just at everybody's fingertips. So there's no easy solution to keeping people interested. But I think if you're a good band and you've got good material, and as long as you feel like you can keep churning it out, then the more music you churn out, and even if it's not the greatest song you ever put out, you know, you put it out as a free download, you put it out as a B-side, you put it on a download card and give it out for free at concerts. I think, again, songs are ammo. And I have this other project that I've been doing for many years, Cue Ball, that I work on with Bumblefoot, I've just kind of given up on putting CDs out because I don't tour. It's not like me and a bunch of other guys. It's kind of like a Moby or a Beck sort of situation where I'm playing with a constant rotating group of people who are backing musicians. So they're not really in the band, so it's kind of hard to kind of hold them all down and set up a tour or set up shows. So songs are my lifeblood. The more songs I put out, the more I have to promote, and each song promotes the song before it and the song after it. There's no rhyme or reason. It's just not this, you know, I had a long conversation with somebody about this the other day. There's no, unless you're an established act, unless you're a Fear Factory or a Slayer or, you know, or a band that's just been doing this forever. If you're a new band, and technically, you know, as far as the industry's concerned, we're a new band. You know, I mean, we've been around for less than 3 years. You know, you just have to keep chugging away, play as many shows as you possibly can if you're up for that. And if you're a band like us, you're a bunch of older fogies who aren't willing to get on the tour bus and travel the country in Europe because you have day jobs or other obligations or whatever it is. You know, just keep yourself active on the internet and keep putting music out. That's really the best medicine.
And what do you feel that are the, like, you know, the future and objectives for Return to Earth then? And
I think we want to keep challenging ourselves to put out creative music, whether it's Return to Earth or whatever other projects we're doing. We really didn't have any sort of inklings when we put the first album out that this was going to turn into something full-time for us, but at the same time, you know, we kind of knew that we had some quality material, and when you're playing, you know, in a band with a guy who's considered one of the best drummers in the world, you know that you're going to kind of grab some attention. And Chris is more passionate about this than anybody else I know. It's not like he's doing this for fun, or he's doing this, I mean, he is doing it for fun, but you know, he takes it pretty seriously, and we're already working on album number three. I mean, we're not, like, we talk about being, like, being restless. I mean, Chris and I and Brett, whether individually or together, we're always writing new material. It kind of defines who we are as people and as musicians. We're all, to a certain extent, we're all studio geeks, and we're all kind of sitting in there with the technology. And expectations, I mean, I would love to put another album out with Metal Blade, if not more, and I would like to, I'd like to get on a stage. And, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, whether you play 100 shows a year or you play 10, live performance, even in today's day and age where people don't have to, like, leave their house to see live music, whether it's on YouTube or, you know, on the web in one way, shape, or form, is still, the lifeblood of the industry. The more you get out there and the more you expose yourself to fans of music who come to these clubs, the more you're going to make a name for yourself. I signed a band that you may have heard of called Swashbuckle, who was a pirate metal band out of Jersey. I signed them in 2007, and actually we put their first album out in 2006, Proved by the Damned, and we were ready to put the second record out, and then Nuclear Blast came along and said they were interested in signing them, and I mean, those kids were like, 23, 24 years old, and they were willing to do what I wasn't. You know, they were willing to get in a van and make $5 a day per diem, and deal with all the rigors of the rock and roll lifestyle and be an opening act and go through all that shit. And they're a hell of a lot more popular than the Return to Earth right now because all they do is fucking tour. You know, and I'm thrilled for them. I mean, I'm thrilled for them, A, because I think they're all, you know, hard working good kids, and I really like, obviously if I didn't like the band I wouldn't have signed them, but you know, I own the first record, so the more they tour, the more they make my investment back. So I think that's the point. If you're in a band of that caliber, then you know that live shows are gonna make a difference, especially if you're on a bill with, you know, you see more and more festivals are becoming sort of the lifeblood of the touring industry right now, because you want to get people there who are interested in bands that sort of sound like you to begin with, and then they kind of become interested in you as a result. So, I think we have a couple more albums up our sleeve, and, you know, whether it's with Metal Blade, I mean, we hope it's with Metal Blade, we're happy with them, and I think they're happy with us, and I think the expectations for, you know, what they were planning to get from us have been met. We've gotten some good press, and we're going to play some shows, and we put out a good record, and I know Brian cares about, you know, making money at the end of the day, but at the same time, I think he's pretty passionate about putting out music that he really enjoys, and hopefully he'll enjoy what we have, you know, up our sleeve for the next record, and maybe we'll up the ante the next time and do a full tour when the album comes out. But as long as Chris is kicking around in COVID heat, it's always going to be hard, but you know, you accept it. You know, Brett and I talk about it all the time. I play in one band with the guitar player from Guns N' Roses, and I'm in another band with the drummer from Coheed and Cambria. So while that's frustrating that you have to wait for these guys to come back or have to deal with them being on the road, and, you know, we exchange files over the internet. We're in that sort of world where we can do that now, where we can write while they're on the road and the rest of us are back home. You also say, hey, I'm doing something right. If these guys want to be in a band with me, then I got to be doing something fucking right. So, so I'm just trying to kind of build that sort of, that small empire of like-minded individuals, and Chris and Ron Dalla, you know, amongst those guys. And those guys are a hell of a lot more talented than I'll ever be as far as, you know, crafting what they do with their instruments. So I'm real thrilled to be working with them, and if we can keep it going for as long as possible, that's really the goal.
Okay, is there any other remarks that you want to say to the people listening to this interview that are going to be checking out the band and are interested in seeing you guys live?
I guess, you know, people always ask me this question, and I always usually go off on some tangent that has nothing to do with the band, but I want to thank the people who've checked out the material so far, and I hope that people have an open mind. I know people might listen to the record and expect to hear a Coheed album or expect to hear a Dillinger Escape Plan album, and they may be pleasantly or not so pleasantly surprised by what they hear, but sites like yours are the kind of the lifeblood of the industry for bands like us who don't have the benefit of a huge machine of major label, you know, Lady Gaga style bullshit kind of fueling what we do, and we don't have handlers, you know, we take care of our own business, you know, we deal with Metal Blade, and Metal Blade is, I was surprised to find out that Metal Blade isn't exactly a hugely staffed label anymore, and really, there are no hugely staffed labels anymore. I mean, the industry has completely changed, so we need guys like, you know, we need sites like Infernal Masquerade and Metal Assault and whoever the hell else is giving us a great review and giving us the opportunity to have these interviews and give it the exposure that we need to kind of keep the band breathing and alive until we're actually able to get on a stage. So I guess that's my long-winded way of saying thank you to you guys for doing what you do, because I mean, metal is really an industry. You know, I've never really been in a full-fledged metal band before that anyone could really take seriously. And what I'm learning is, it's really it's almost like a brotherhood. It's almost like, you know, we just went up to do an interview at WSOU, you know, in Jersey, and I grew up listening to that radio station when I was a kid, and now to be on it, even though again it's just kind of like a blip on the map, it's just kind of a thrill because, you know, you're still sharing the same hallways that, you know, Metallica and Anthrax and Testament and Prong and, you know, the list goes on. All these bands that you grew up kind of listening to and that you had the passion for, now you find then that there are kids that have the same sort of passion for your band that you had for those bands growing up. So, I mean, that really says a lot. And no matter how many records we sell or no matter how many, you know, shows we play, I mean, I feel like we'll always have that, and that will always be enough to want us to keep making music. It's like finding other people out there who just get juiced up by, like, hearing what we have to throw out there. So keep it coming, kids. Keep it coming.